from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, there is a book, and this is not, you know, book talk or anything. Don't get scared, kids. We're not going to talk about books for the next hour. If we do, please give. But there is a book, highly interesting, at least to me, called Paving Paradise, about the experience over the last, three decades now, but who's counting, of the Army Corps of Engineers as the enforcer in the state of Florida of the Clean Water Act, specifically the part of the Clean Water Act that said there will be no net loss of wetlands, because we need wetlands. And the history of the Army Corps in enforcing that law, which has resulted in, what do you think? That's right, major net loss of wetlands. Because within about 6 months, the Army Corps of Engineers decided that the developers that they were tasked by Congress to regulate were, in fact, their clients. So there's that. There's the two investigations into the disaster in New Orleans in 2005, one from the University of California, one from Louisiana State University, both independent, forensic, staffed with highly competent, world-renowned engineers and scientists, both of which came to the conclusion that in large measure, the 2005 flood was caused by catastrophic engineering misjudgments, mistakes, and miscalculations over 4.5 decades by the United States Army Corps of Engineers. Those reports formed the basis of a documentary I made called The Big Uneasy. They're on the website at thebiguneasy.com. Apparently, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has read neither that book, nor those reports, nor seen that film. Because here's what he told Brian Williams of NBC News right in the wake of Superstorm Sandy.
One of the things I'm going to be talking to the president about is bringing the Army Corps in immediately to talk to us about how's the best way to rebuild the Jersey Shore.
Well, I can tell you, Governor, if you're listening, and if you are, hey, please give. I can tell you what you'll get, most likely, based on past experience. You'll get something built that is big, visually impressive, expensive, and faulty. So if that's what you want, give them a call right away, and good luck from the good hands people at Hello, Welcome to the Show. Chapeau to Colorado and Washington. Let's all move there. Ladies and gentlemen, from just off Leicester Square in the heart of sunny London, I'm Harry Shearer welcoming you to this edition of the show. Speaking of states, Governor Christie, if you want help with that Corps of Engineer thing, don't call the president, because the report to the president about the defective pumps in the New Orleans, the new $10 billion, maybe 14, who's counting? Again, protective system in New Orleans. That report has been gathering dust on the president's desk for 3.5 years now. Interesting. But now, we're not number one. Yes, the reports continue to filter in, ladies and gentlemen, on the United States' position in the world. This week, the Prosperity Index. We care about that, don't we? Don't we? Really? Don't we? I thought maybe we still did. Maybe the survival index would be, at this point, more our speed. But anyway, the Ligatum Institute produces the Prosperity Index. Jeffrey Gedman, he's president and chief executive, so he would know. He says the Ligatum Prosperity Index allows us to paint a comprehensive picture of what makes a country truly successful, encompassing traditional measures of material wealth, as well as capturing citizens' sense of well-being, from how safe they feel to their perceived personal freedom. GDP alone can never offer a complete view of prosperity. We believe that by measuring the quality of education, healthcare, social capital, and opportunity, our Prosperity Index gives the clearest view of how countries are prospering today and how they're likely to... All right, any. Thanks, Jeffrey. Who's number one on the World Prosperity Index? Hans? No, more likely Olaf. Norway. Norway. You think... Well, I don't know. I've been to Oslo. It seemed fine. Number two, Denmark. You wouldn't think that from those films that are coming out of there. They seem dark. Denmark. Three, Sweden. Are you getting the picture, ladies and gentlemen? Those damned socialist Europeans. Number four, Australia. Number five, New Zealand. Well, I guess prosperity is antipodean at heart. Number six, Canada. What's going on here? Number seven, Finland again, with the Finland in the north and the thing, and the European. Number eight, Netherlands. Number nine, Switzerland. Okay. Again, cuckoo clocks and chocolate make you happy, I guess. Ireland, number 10. Ireland, really? Ireland. Last I looked, they were in the economic toilet. May have climbed out. Luxembourg. Number 12, ladies and gentlemen. Number friggin' 12, the United States of America. We're number 12, followed closely by the United Kingdom. So once again, they're our poodle when it comes to prosperity. Number 25 on the list, Malta. Malta. I don't know. Jeffrey Gedman may have some splaining to do, but once again, we're not number one. So if you're busting your buttons, start fixing them. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the godly. Cardinal George Pell, he's the de facto head of the Catholic Church in Australia. I don't know what happened to the de jure one. He said other institutions share the church's blindness to sexual abuse. That's the best defense. In an interview published over the weekend in a newspaper owned by Rupert Murdoch, Pell acknowledged children were abused by priests who were often simply transferred to other positions if they were found out. Back in those days, they were entitled to think of pedophilia as simply a sin that you would repent of, he said. They didn't realize that in the worst cases, it was an addiction, a raging addiction. His comments follow an accusation by a police official, Peter Fox, Deputy Chief Inspector Peter Fox, that he was taken off an investigation into clerical pedophilia because he annoyed church officials. Ah, the best defense is a bad offense. Fox accused the church of decades of cover-up. An archbishop, a bishop, and a priest are implicated in cover-up, he said. There's something very wrong when you have so many pedophile priests operating in such a small area for such an extended period of time with immunity, unquote. So, they're fighting it out down there. I mean, in Australia. And, ladies and gentlemen, now, on the subject of full-body scanners, which we've learned in recent weeks on this broadcast, are being phased out. Last time I flew out of Los Angeles here to London, they weren't using them anymore. They were sitting there, but they were no longer redirecting you from the metal detector line to the scanner line. Now, the scanner line is closed, at least in Los Angeles. And now comes a report in the October issue of Diabetes Technology and Therapeutics. You get that, don't you? I read it for the ads. It says that airport full-body scans can cause malfunctions in insulin pumps or continuous glucose monitors. Thank goodness we don't have a lot of diabetes in this. Other devices, such as CGM transmitters and Medtronic's iPro recorder, can also be affected by airport body scanners. I don't know what those are. Are those the things that they say on television, you don't have to prick your finger anymore? Yes. Joke goes here. Those scanners join computer-assisted tomography, that is, CAT scans, X-rays, MRIs, and PET scans as devices that insulin pump and CGM device wearers are advised to avoid. Regular metal detectors have no effect on these devices. To avoid body scanner-caused electromagnetic malfunctions, the report recommends that wearers decline full-body scans and ask for pat-downs. Touch my junk. I'm a diabetic. Formaldehyde, it's got to be good for you. It's in so many things. It's got to be good for you. A survey conducted by researchers at UC Berkeley now finds elevated levels of environmental contaminants, including formaldehyde, in child care centers in the San Francisco Bay Area. The study evaluated 40 child care centers for potential environmental toxins. Researchers found the overall levels were within risk levels determined by federal regulations. In most of the centers, the researchers found levels of five compounds that exceeded guidelines for safe exposure. Formaldehyde was one of the five found in excess. It's known to have both short-term and long-term health effects, although the Formaldehyde Manufacturers Association would like you to think that it's, well, I think the head of it is about to drink a whole pint of it momentarily. We'll have that for you live. Many organizations, including the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, have identified formaldehyde as a carcinogen, but it's commonly found in furniture glue, carpet, paints, fabrics, building materials, and furnishings made from pressed woods. Luckily, nothing you have around the house. The centers in the study were chosen based on their locations in geographically diverse communities with a mix of urban, rural, and agricultural areas. Aside from their homes, young children spend much of their time in child care centers, according to the report. Many infants and young children can spend as much as 10 hours a day, 5 days a week in child care centers, it says. In California, about 1.1 million children, Tom, in California, about 1.1 million children. Thank you. Aged 5 and under 10 preschools or child care facilities. You mean facilities? Yeah. By kindergarten, half of all California children have attended a licensed child care facility, and as their immune systems have not fully developed yet, children are more vulnerable to the effects of chemicals and toxins. Recent studies have shown child care center environments may also contain lead, pesticides, allergens, and other contaminants. There's no place you can go. We've filled it all up with good stuff. That's what we've done over the last few years. And we should be darn proud, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I think. You know? Pride is the only refuge at a point like this. The new F-bomb foreclosure. Stories continue. Although they don't get much media attention these days because there's a new poll. Hey, those polls. Have you seen the stories about the Republicans' internal polls? That sounds painful, I know, but the polls that they were conducting for themselves, kind of wrong, kind of misled them to think that they really thought they were winning the election, interestingly. But now, the new F-bomb foreclosure, an executive who the Justice Department says facilitated a scheme to defraud Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, two government-sponsored enterprises that buy up a lot of, or have bought up a lot of crappy mortgages. That executive is now spearheading J.P. Morgan Chase's role in the government's program to compensate victims of the big bank's abusive foreclosure practices. The executive, Rebecca Myron, worked at Countrywide and Bank of America from 2006 until earlier this year. In a lawsuit filed just last month in New York, Justice Department attorneys alleged that Countrywide perpetrated a two-year scam to foist shoddy home loans on Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Neither Myron nor any other individuals are named as defendants. No criminal charges have been filed. Of course not. Why would you file criminal charges when fraud is practiced against a government agency? But Myron is one of two bank officials named in the suit as having repeatedly ignored warnings about the scam known internally at Countrywide as the hustle. That wouldn't be a tip-off. It's just a dance. It's Van McCoy. We're just shouting out to Van McCoy, the hustle, as the alleged scheme was called. She prohibited employees from circulating some of those warnings that she ignored outside their division. Myron was chief operating officer of the Countrywide lending division that allegedly carried out the hustle. Now she is running the Independent Foreclosure Review at J.P. Morgan Chase, overseen by federal banking regulators. That requires the nation's biggest banks to compensate victims for harm that the banks inflicted on borrowers. Victims can receive up to $125,000 in cash or get their homes back, you know, if they lost their homes. But the review has already been marred by evidence that the banks themselves play a major role in identifying the victims of their own abuses, raising the question of whether the review is compromised by a conflict of interest. How could that be? How could our fine banks and our fine federal government allow that? The review never seemed designed to place first the interests of those who were supposed to be helped, victimized homeowners, says Neil Borofsky, the former Special Inspector General for TARP. Finding out that the person running for J.P. Morgan Chase is a person whose conduct in the run-up to financial crisis was allegedly so egregious goes beyond irony, he says. It speaks volumes to the bank's true intent and lack of concern for homeowners when addressing the harm that they caused. This report is from ProPublica, by the way. Chase issued a brief statement in reply confirming that Myron is a managing director who's working on the independent foreclosure review process. The statement added, it would not be appropriate for us to discuss another firm's litigation. They declined to make Myron available for comment. She did not return a message left at her home number. Countrywide was the industry leader in subprime loans. Fannie and Freddie guarantee home loans, relieving banks of the risk that borrowers will default. The suit alleges that Countrywide deliberately gutted its system for detecting unqualified borrowers, leading to a flood of flawed and outright fraudulent loans that ended up being backed by Fannie and Freddie. The new modus operandi was called the high-speed swim lane. We're having fun at the bank. Its motto was, loans move forward, never backward. What president does that remind you of? No wonder he likes the banks. The company allegedly paid bonuses to its employees based on the number of loans they pushed through, not on whether the loans were any good. According to the suit, the new system created a torrent of loans that often featured inflated borrower incomes accelerated by employees who had every incentive to fabricate numbers to get the loans into the high-speed swim lane. We'll be hearing, hopefully, some more from Rebecca Myrone in the days and weeks to come, but probably not. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Clean, save, too safe to meet. Save, save, too safe to meet.
Addie, you enjoying did you enjoy your time off? You've been off the show for a couple weeks.
No, just sitting here twiddling my quarks.
Twiddling your quarks, okay. We have news of the atom. I'm sure you'll be delighted to hear that. And it starts now. Japan's new nuclear industry watchdog is under a cloud.
Already?
Yeah. After admitting to additional errors in its maps caused by faulty weather data on the expected spread of radioactive substances from a nuclear accident.
Accidents don't happen.
Yes, they do. The Nuclear Regulation Authority admitted this week to more errors in its maps. It discovered them when it was checking data of a nuclear plant, the Genkai plant and the Sendai plant, both of which are operated by the same owner. It had previously admitted to errors on the two plants after its initial release. Before finding the latest errors, it planned to release corrected forecast maps this week, but these mistakes led it to postpone their release once again.
You know what I say?
What?
Maps.
All right. Experts remain divided over whether an active fault, this is in Japan as well, runs under Kansai Electric Power Company's Oi nuclear power plant.
You said Oi?
I said Oi.
But nothing happened.
Not yet.
Oi.
Raising questions about whether it's safe to continue operating two reactors at the plant.
Oi.
On Friday, outside experts participated in the Nuclear Regulation Authority's inspection of the two reactors, currently the only ones active in Japan. They were unable to agree at a meeting held to assess the results and determine whether a crush zone underneath the plant constitutes an active fault.
That's the zone that Petraeus was in?
Yeah, the crush zone. Cute. The NRA, which was inaugurated this year to revamp the country's nuclear regulatory framework, decided to hold another meeting to decide whether it's a fault or not. The agency claimed data on geographical features was not sufficient to prove the crush zone beneath the Oi plant is not an active fault. One expert, a professor at Toyo University, says the displacement of layers at the location clearly suggests movement of the fault in the period up to 120,000 to 130,000 years ago. But others disagree, saying such displacement of layers can be caused by landslides and other factors. This difference in opinion is due to the difficulty in determining by mere inspection of displacement traces whether layers were moved by an earthquake. The location and shape of the fault will need to be examined in detail at various spots before drawing a final conclusion. Under guidelines for earthquake resistance of nuclear plants, faults are considered active if they've moved in the last 120,000 to 130,000 years.
It's kind of short-term thinking, isn't it?
A scandal threatens to hamper South Korea's efforts to sell its nuclear technology around the world as it shuts down several of its own nuclear reactors to investigate how some of their parts were incorrectly approved. South Korean officials recently discovered that safety certificates for some of their reactors' parts had been forged. The subsequent closures could put the country at risk of power shortages this winter. Government authorities have stressed the parts in question are ordinary pieces, such as fuses and power switches that aren't directly tied to reactor safety. The shutdown has nonetheless cast an unflattering light on the industry as South Korea tries to make its name abroad. In the wake of Fuk, they're trying to create an image of quality and safety, says Edwin Lyman of the Global Security Program at the Union of Concerned Scientists. Nuclear power has been an increasingly prized product for South Korea. The country won a coveted $20 billion contract to export nuke reactors to the UAE a few years ago and has marketed its technology across Asia, North Africa, and the Middle East. A South Korean plant has a promotional video in more than a dozen languages, Arabic, Bahasa, and Thai. You don't speak any of those languages, do you, Addy?
I speak barely English.
Clearly, by the sentence structure right there. So, South Koreans are becoming the new AQ Khan, who, by the way, is starting a political party in Pakistan. Isn't that cute? Father of the Pakistani bomb? Nothing from you.
No, my quirks are twiddling.
Dateline Seoul. Tiny cracks have been found in tunnels at a nuclear plant in South Korea, increasing concerns about nuclear safety. Following that scandal involving unverified parts, the reactor where the cracks were found will remain offline for weeks as regulators investigate the problem. Microscopic cracks in six control rod tunnels. Rods, of course, are used to regulate the speed of nuclear reactions taking place inside reactors. The cracks are not serious and there's no risk of radiation leakage, said the head of the mechanics department at the plant.
There's never a risk.
There is never a risk. You're right. Federal regulators in this country say a recent steam leak inside an auxiliary building at Entergy's Palisades nuclear power plant in Michigan, in Covert Township, Michigan. It must be a mistake. Contained low levels of radiation. The leak was contained in the building. The leak forced the operators of the plant to remove it from service last week. The NRC says it has no immediate safety concerns.
Back burner, babe.
The cost of the long-running outage at the San Onofre nuclear plant in California now tops $300 million, but it remains unclear who will ultimately foot the bill. Yeah, I wonder.
Sarcasm is not called for.
Edison International, the parent company of the plant operator, has submitted a proposal to restart the less heavily damaged second unit and run it at partial power, but the fuel has been removed from Unit 3. And it's not clear, says Chief Executive Ted Craver, at this time if the units can be repaired to run at full power. And replacement of the steam generators would take some years, because they're steam generators. Nobody knows how to... The danger Hurricane Sandy posed to nuclear power plants along the East Coast highlights some of the same vulnerabilities that terrorists could exploit, watchdog groups say. The unprecedented storm posed two main challenges to atomic energy facilities: rising water levels and interruptions to the electricity grid. Both have the potential to disrupt crucial cooling systems at the plants, and particularly those for pools used to cool spent nuclear fuel.
Never happen.
The Hanford Advisory Board is recommending the Department of Energy start work immediately to build new storage tanks for high-level radioactive waste. The board acknowledged the recommendation was a significant shift in its thinking. In the past, some board members have emphasized that attention and available money should be concentrated on getting the waste treated for disposal rather than building more tanks to store it. But now members are concerned about the recent discovery of a leak of waste from an inner shell of one of Hanford's 28 double-shell tanks. The waste has been contained between the shells, as the double-shell tanks were designed to do, but the slow leak is a possible indication that the double-shell leaks may be deteriorating. The waste has already been moved to them from single-shell tanks, which they know are deteriorating.
I call for triple-shell tanks.
One of the two reactors of the Comanche Peak nuclear power plant near Glen Rose, Texas, has been shut down after a cooling pump overheated. According to an event report filed with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, Unit 1 was shut down manually because of high temperature indications. An alarm that warns of an improper level of oil for the pump also sounded. Dallas-based Luminant Generating is currently looking into a cause of the problem. The reactor had to be shut down to remove the pump. There was never any safety issue at the plant, according to a spokesperson.
See? Never. Ever. Ever.
Four members of a Japanese government team that sets atomic reactor safety standards received funding from utility companies or nuclear manufacturers, raising questions about their neutrality in the wake of last year's thing, according to the AP. The Nuclear Regulation Authority says Nagoya University professor Akio Yamamoto received $339,000 over the past 3 years for research on reactors. That included $79,000 from a TEPCO subsidiary. That's the utility that ran Fuk. The authority said three others on the six-member standards team received industry funding. Getting such money is not illegal, but could call the neutrality of the team into question since the industry would benefit from laxer standards.
I think we all would benefit from laxer standards. I'm all for lax.
The Nuclear Regulatory Commission says Friday it has asked Exelon Corporation. What did you say?
Exelon
Corporation, to address concerns over how the company would handle a catastrophic flood at the Dresden nuclear station in northern Illinois after recent inspections indicated potential problems. Among the concerns is how the company would refuel diesel pumps that circulate water to cool the reactor and how it would keep equipment from being clogged with flood debris. Exelon has 30 days to respond. We're not saying their plan won't work, but we've raised questions, says a spokesperson for the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. She says there is no, say it with me now,
immediate safety risk.
Immediate safety risk. That's correct. Underline immediate. Won't you? Thank you very much. Clean, cheap, safe, too. Non-immediate to meter. Our friend, the Atom. This is LeShow from London, and it is Remembrance Day here in Britain, and it is Veterans Day in the United States. So a perfect day to bring you this news from outside the bubble. This is from the Seattle Times and ProPublica. A problem has plagued the U.S. military since the Gulf War of the 90s, a failure to create and maintain the types of field records that have documented American conflicts since the Revolutionary War. A joint investigation by those two media has found that the record-keeping breakdown was especially acute in the early years of the Iraq War. The military has also lost or destroyed records from Afghanistan, according to officials and previously undisclosed documents. The loss of field records has far-reaching implications. It complicates efforts by soldiers to claim benefits. It makes it harder for military strategists to learn the lessons from Iraq and Afghanistan. Military officers and historians say field records provide the granular details that tell larger stories hidden from participants in the day-to-day conflict. Confusion. The Army says it has taken steps to improve handling of records, but officials familiar with the problem say the missing material may never be retrieved. Why, this happened in Afghanistan while General Petraeus was running things over there, didn't it? Huh. A little busy with the email, I guess. I can't even start to describe the dimensions of the problem, says Conrad Crane, director of the U.S. Army's Military History Institute. I fear we're never really going to know clearly what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan because we don't have the records, unquote. But Petraeus is an intellectual and an academic. The Army has the biggest deficiencies. The U.S. Central Command also lost records, according to reports and other documents. In Baghdad, CENTCOM and the Army disagreed about which was responsible for keeping records. As a result, some units were instructed to erase computer hard drives when they rotated home, destroying the records that had been stored on them. Through 2008, dozens of Army units deployed in both countries, the I and the A, either had no field records or lacked sufficient reports for a unit history. Record-keeping was so poor in Afghanistan from 2004 to 2007 that very few Operation Enduring Freedom records were saved anywhere, either for historians' use or for the service's documentary needs or for the increasing challenge with documenting PTSD, according to an Army report dated 2009. The Pentagon was put on notice as early as 2005 that Army units weren't turning in records for storage to a central computer system. That would be one of the things that Donald Rumsfeld knew he knew. In that year, a lack of field records forced the Army to spend years and millions of dollars to reconstruct the locations of troops who may have been exposed to toxic plumes that were among the suspected causes of Gulf War syndrome. At the outset of the Iraq War, military commanders tried to avoid repeating that mistake, ordering units to preserve all historical records. But, says the reporting here, the Army botched the job. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this very broadcast. You're aware by now that as it didn't take Nate Silver to predict, he's the what the Brits would call the numbers boffin at the New York Times. The post-election period has been marked by incessant talk about the fiscal cliff and the need for a grand bargain to resolve the situation, a bargain that, at least by what members of both parties are saying and leaders of both parties are saying, would target, among other things, so-called entitlements, i.e. Social Security and Medicare. You may remember a couple of weeks ago, Stephanie Kelton said on this program that in the opinion of her and people like her, or people who just like her, that's kind of unnecessary. And the transcript of that interview, as I said last week, is up at harryshearer.com. It's been interesting. The feedback on Twitter to that interview has been largely favorable with some dissenting comments. Very little email arguing with her. I'd like to keep the conversation going. So if you have, I'll say it this way, empirically based objections to what she said, I'd be interested in broadcasting those. But anyway, as I say, the talk about the grand bargain goes on.
Deficit.
Fiscal cliff. Our grandchildren.
Entitlement.
Responsibility.
These days, it sounds like everybody wants the same thing. But everybody wants something different, too. Confusing? You bet. What you need is less noise and one grand bargain. Hi, I'm B-Rock. And here at B-Rock's Grand Bargain Barn, that's what we're all about. Think you can't afford real Social Security? You're wrong. But look over here. Right now, this is B-Rock's Streamlined Safety Net, straight off the factory floor. Looks and sounds so much like the real thing, you won't notice the difference until it's too late. You could pay double, and you wouldn't get twice the value. But that's the secret of B-Rock's Grand Bargain Barn. We make the best deals possible. And we pass the pain and hardship on to you. How do we do it? Simple. We deal in volume. That's right. We're louder than anyone else. But wait, there's more. How about these vintage 2001 Bush tax cuts? When they first came out, they were a strictly limited edition scheduled to be gone by 2010. Now, thanks to the superior bargaining power of B-Rock's Grand Bargain Barn, you can enjoy the luxurious fit and finish of $8 more in your pocket every month, straight through to the next election. And who knows when that is? Sure, there are folks who'll offer you higher tax rebates and lower entitlements. But ask them if they offer guaranteed home delivery on time every time. There are even folks who'll say you don't even need a grand bargain. But like my accountant Timmy says,
if you're not scared, we're out of business.
But these grand bargains won't be around forever. Hey, you're lucky I can offer them to you today. So don't wait. Act now. Make B-Rock's Grand Bargain Barn your one-stop shop for all your fiscal responsibility needs. And if there's not a Grand Bargain Barn within the sound of my voice, I'll talk louder.
Grand Bargain Barn. Grand Bargain Barn.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Yes, I'm still here. Reviewing the apologies for you. British director Sir Peter Hall has apologized to Downton Abbey actress Laura Carmichael after he unintentionally disrupted her West End debut. Audiences at the opening night of Chekhov's Uncle Vanya heard Sir Peter speaking in the stalls during the play's final scene. Reports over the weekend suggested he'd been heckling the actors. In a statement, however, the 81-year-old said he'd been disorientated after falling asleep.
I'm mortified that I unintentionally disrupted the final scene of Uncle Vanya, and I sent a personal note to Laura Carmichael offering my apologies. I enjoyed the evening and her performance immensely, and I cannot stress too strongly my remarks were in no way directed at her or the production. Being rather aged, I dropped off for a moment, and on being woken by my wife, I was briefly disorientated. Remarks made in the resulting confusion were not in any way related to Uncle Vanya, which I think is a very fine production with a marvelous company of actors.
The actress continued to deliver her emotional closing speech despite the disruption. She then joined the cast for the curtain call. Newspaper reports suggested that Sir Peter had heckled with the words,
"It doesn't work and you don't work. It's not good enough. I could be at home watching television."
For NFL studio analyst Terry Bradshaw, Fox NFL studio analyst Terry Bradshaw apologized for inadvertently making a racially insensitive remark when describing Reggie Bush's touchdown run last week. Bradshaw said Bush's 18-yard score was like it was chasing that bucket of chicken the wind was blowing. Bradshaw told USA Today he apologizes for something I didn't know I said. By way of explanation, Bradshaw added that his intent was to direct the comment toward fellow host Jimmy Johnson. Terry Bradshaw says Johnson was referring to me about chicken. I eat 4 pieces on this set every Sunday. A Fox spokesperson says Bradshaw will not be reprimanded. A fireworks rocket misfired and ricocheted into boxes of undetonated fireworks, setting the rest of the $3,200 display in Scotland off all at once, scattering the audience and injuring one girl. This was the Monday night fireworks display, Guy Fawkes Night in the United Kingdom, at the Pentland Community Center in Edinburgh, and they issued an apology. This was a freak accident and most regrettable, but this is the first incident we've had in 10 years of holding this popular community event, and we extend our apologies to everyone who was alarmed. The election apologies now, ladies and gentlemen. Chicago election officials, really? Apologize to the hundreds of frustrated Chicago voters who were turned away from their neighborhood polling places amid confusion and sometimes angry exchanges. We had a bit of a bumpy ride, said Langdon Neal, chairwoman of the Chicago Board of Election Commissioners. We apologize for those 2 hours of a bumpy ride, but we think we righted the ship. The confusion originated from the redrawing of ward maps, which left 20% of all voters with new polling places, exacerbated by the failure of the city's election website to handle the overwhelming demand. By 6:30 a.m., the site had crashed, along with the new system for texting poll locations, leaving many voters and election judges stranded with no way to find their polling places. Meanwhile, as they say in the news, election officials in Hawaii have confirmed 24 out of 140 polling places on the island of Oahu ran out of paper ballots. Last Tuesday, the number was originally reported as 5 polling places, but it had increased by nearly 5 times the day after the election. There was only one electronic voting machine at each location. Only 10 voters per hour could be accommodated. Others waited in line for sometimes more than an hour for additional paper ballots to arrive. State elections official Rex Quidia said the election staff realized too late that the ballot order was incorrect. As the election staff rushed to deliver more ballots, their progress was slowed by afternoon traffic. The BBC has suspended all investigations on its flagship daily investigative news program, Newsnight, after the program accused a leading conservative of being involved in child abuse, with the star witness admitting hours earlier that he had mistaken the identity of the accused. And the governor general of the BBC has resigned suddenly late last night, Britain time. The BBC apologized, and the director general apologized. The program itself carried a full apology Friday night. And they'll call you personally and apologize to you if you want, because they just can't stop apologizing right now. Billboard magazine reports that a Las Vegas resort that was criticized for an explicit Guns N' Roses ad has apologized and changed the artwork. The ad was for the band's four-week residency at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. It featured a woman who appeared to be sexually assaulted under a Welcome to Las Vegas sign. What could be wrong with... County commissioners became aware of the art after they temporarily named a street Paradise City Road in honor of the band's song. Rape crisis group slammed the campaign, said it glorified domestic violence. The Hard Rock issued a statement saying it regretted offending members of the community and started changing the ads. It's not the Hard Rock I know. A Grammy-winning folk-pop duo have canceled all their upcoming tour dates because of, quote, internal discord and irreconcilable differences of ambition. During their announcement, the pair also made it clear they were unable to continue as a touring entity at this time. In their Facebook statement, they apologized for dropping the tour dates and made an offer to refund anyone's non-refundable charges, including service charges and travel reservations. We sincerely apologize for the canceling of all of our tour dates. It is something we deeply regret, they wrote. However, due to internal discord and irreconcilable differences of ambition, we are unable to continue as a touring entity at this time. Unquote. The name of the band, The Civil Wars. You're welcome. A British TV channel has apologized after cutting the word gay out of an episode of The Simpsons. They run The Simpsons here? Really? Why don't I... Channel 4 censored the word from a repeat of the U.S. show last week at 12:55 p.m. because it was deemed unsuitable for viewers at midday, despite it being used in its proper context. The 1994 episode features Homer and Ned Flanders at a football game. The pair bond after Flanders buys him food and introduces him to a star player. As they are leaving the game, Homer declares, "I want everyone to know that this is Ned Flanders, my friend, but his passing work makes Lenny and Carl hear differently." "What do you say?" Lenny asks. Carl replies, "I don't do Carl. I don't know, something about being gay." During the edited episode, Carl's line was cut out. According to Channel 4, all episodes shown before 6 p.m. are checked for offensive contact, but the TV station admits it was wrong to make the change this time. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. It is a copyrighted feature of this very program. And now, because we started with them, we're going to end with them.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are proud to present Let Us Try, a ballad of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Let us try.
Hurricane Isaac storm surge flooding of areas that were not inundated during Hurricanes Katrina and Gustav cannot be blamed on post-Katrina improvements in the New Orleans area levee system. According to a post-storm study undertaken by the very people who built the system, the Army Corps of Engineers. Yes, they investigated themselves. What's your problem? Residents and elected leaders in several local parishes pushed for the study after seeing record flooding in some areas and worrying that raised levees surrounding New Orleans may have increased water heights in their communities. The study found that the $10 billion improvements may have been responsible for adding only an average 1 inch to surge heights during Isaac. The study will be peer-reviewed in April by a group of independent scientists. As the San Diego desk points out, usually you peer review a study before you make it public. And as Superstorm Sandy flooded Atlantic City, one area was shielded from damage by dunes constructed at taxpayer expense by the Army Corps of Engineers, casinos, and other beachfront businesses and homes. Nearby, another set of residents didn't get government-paid storm defense. In one of the city's poorest neighborhoods, water filled the streets, knocking down doors, sloshing into bedrooms, destroying furniture, and leaving residents wondering if they would drown. The government has protected their cash cow, the casinos, at the expense of the people, said Edsel Coates. Somebody named Edsel, ladies and gentlemen, at this point in time. Must have been named after the car, do you think? Whose home near the inlet in the Atlantic City area flooded and roof caved in. The casinos are receiving preferential treatment, and there's the neglect of the average Atlantic City resident. Decisions about which projects are completed and where get made based on availability of funding, public support, and the type of erosion that occurred in the past. We don't have an endless pool of money, says the spokesman for the state environmental department. New Jersey's oceanfront communities were among the hardest hit by the storm late last month. Areas with minimal damage were along a five-mile stretch of beach where contractors this year finished an $18 million replenishment program overseen by the United States Army Corps of Engineers, which helped the Trump, Taj Mahal, Showboat, and other casinos survive the largest tropical system in the Atlantic. By the way, the United States Army Corps of Engineers called for building about 1,600 feet of bulkhead in two sections along the inlet in question to protect the area from storm damage. They called for that way back in 1996. That wasn't constructed as part of the beach project that protected the casinos because of a lack of money and because the state didn't have real estate easements from landowners. The spokesman for the State Environment Department said the Army Corps specified only this summer what easements were required. That would be 16 years after they called for the improvements. Let us try, ladies and gentlemen. Let us not try particularly rapidly, but let us try the motto of your United States Army Corps of Engineers. Wondering, ladies and gentlemen, why the Apologies of the Week segment did not include Chris Matthews, who had said on election night that he was glad that Hurricane Sandy happened because, in his opinion, it helped Barack Obama's re-election. Matthews spent 2 minutes explaining why he thought that that was a bad thing for him to have said later in the week, but he never once used the word sorry or apology, so that's why. Just, you know, clearing the decks. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world to the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave. Yeah, they still have that. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet. Yeah, they still have that too. At two different locations, live and archived, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. On the Mighty 104 in Berlin. I said that. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com and available as a free podcast through KCRW.com. And be just like New Jersey asking the Dutch for help, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. By the way, Governor, if you want to ask the Dutch, I know some people in New Orleans who could help you get in touch with them. Show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks as always to Pam Halstead. Thanks to Adrian Bodnam, Bodders, here at Global Radio in London for help with today's broadcast. This broadcast is represented on Twitter at the handle The Harry Shearer. Join the nearly 77,000 followers. And do it now, won't you? Before there are any more of them. Thanks to the gang and Have I Got News For You for being so kind to me on my appearance this week. Had a ball. And if you're in the United Kingdom, that is to say Britain, that is to say London, I think there's still tickets available for the CD release party at Under the Bridge in London on the 23rd of this month, where we'll be playing the whole record of Can't Take a Hint live with special guests. And it'll be loud. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates from the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless and the home of the Rubber Promise.